Hi, this is Grandpa. Grandma Janice wasn't able to finish this book, so I'm going to go ahead and read the last couple of chapters to you. This is chapter 7, The Slow Eater, Tiny Bite Taker Cure. Once upon a time, there was a little boy named Alan. He had curly brown hair and sturdy legs and a very shiny smile. One morning, he sat down to breakfast, but instead of picking up his spoon and eating his mush and milk like a good little boy, he took a fork and began eating his cereal grain by grain. When his mother, certain that he had eaten all of his mush, brought him an egg, he was still on the 11th grain of cereal. Alan's mother said, "My goodness, you are pokey this morning, dear. What is the matter? Is the mush too hot?" Then she noticed that Alan was eating his cereal with a fork, so she took the fork away and handed him the spoon, saying, "Now then, eat properly and hurry, or your egg will get cold." Alan took the spoon, but instead of filling it with mush, he daintily lifted one grain from the bowl and slowly brought it up to his mouth. His mother watched him for a few minutes and then said, "Well, eat an ice cold egg if you like, but I am going upstairs to sort the laundry, and when I come down, I want to find every bit of that mush and all of the egg eaten." Alan's mother went skipping upstairs and left Alan in the breakfast nook. As soon as his mother left the kitchen, Alan picked up the fork again and began eating his mush by the grain. In a little while, even a whole grain seemed too much, so he broke each grain in two, taking only half grains on the fork tines. He was so interested in his little bitty bites that he didn't hear his mother come in and was very surprised when she suddenly whisked away his breakfast and sent him marching up to his room. At lunchtime, Alan's mother made cream of tomato soup. This was Alan's favorite, very favorite soup, but Alan, instead of eating it up quickly and asking for more, began floating little specks of cracker in the bowl. He floated, chased, and ate them one by one. At 2 o'clock, his mother stopped the little cracker crumb chase, sadly cleared the table, and sent Alan up for a nap. At dinner that night, Alan cut his meat into such small pieces that his father looked over at him and said, "Perhaps you would like to borrow my magnifying glass? I am sure you are going to need it to see those infinitesimal small or infinitesimal bits of meat." Alan's mother said, "He has been like that all day, eating his mush grain by grain with a fork, floating tiny cracker crumbs in his soup, and chasing and eating them one by one, and now this meat. What is the matter with you, Alan?" Alan smiled a shining smile and said, "I guess I'm just a slow eater. I choke if I take larger bites." His mother said, "Nonsense, you were all right yesterday." Alan said sadly, "Yes, mother, but that was yesterday." And he carefully cut a grain of corn into four pieces and delicately put the smaller piece into his mouth. And delicately put the smallest piece into his mouth. The next morning he had not improved a bit, and though his mother scolded and scolded, he took the smallest, slowest bites imaginable, and to make matters worse, he sighed and gazed around the room between each bite. Alan's mother was very distressed, and not knowing what else to do, she called her friend Mrs. Crankminer. "Good morning, Mrs. Crankminer," said Alan's mother. "This is Alan's mother, and I called to ask if you have ever had any difficulty with Wetherill about eating." "Difficulty?" said Mrs. Crankminer. "Just what kind of eating difficulty?" "Well," said Alan's mother, "Alan has suddenly taken to eating so slowly that if I didn't take his plate away, I'm sure that it would take him approximately 12 hours to eat an average meal. He eats his cereal grain by grain, his soup drop by drop, and his meat pore by pore." "Goodness gracious, is the child ill?" asked Mrs. Crankminer. "No, he says that he feels well, and I have taken his temperature, and it's normal. I don't know what the trouble is," said Alan's poor, worried mother. Mrs. Crankminer said, "I certainly have no complaint about Wetherill's eating. My only difficulty is in getting him to stop. Yesterday morning, before breakfast, he weighed 182 pounds, and his father has begun calling him Blimpy." "Oh, my," said Alan's mother. "I guess you have a more serious problem than I have," and she hung up the phone. Then she called her friend Mrs. Wingsproggle. "Mrs. Wingsproggle," she said, "do you have any trouble with Pergola at meal times?" Mrs. Winspraggle said, enunciating very carefully, "No, not exactly trouble, but we do have to key up after her to chew each mouthful 100 times. Sometimes she is forgetful and only chews her food about 93 times, and one day I caught her stopping at 71. Alan's mother could already picture how disastrous it might be if Alan heard that pergola Wingspoggle chewed each bite 100 times, because if she multiplied each grain of mush in a dish by 100 and took into account the unbelievable slowness with which Alan was able to chew, she realized that he would die of slow starvation before a day had passed. Alan's mother hurriedly said goodbye to Mrs. Wingspoggle and hung up the phone. Then she called Patsy's mother. She said, "Does Patsy eat everything that is put before her quickly and without urging?" Patsy's mother said, "Yes, she does. Why?" Alan's mother said, "Because Alan has taken to eating like a scared mosquito, and I don't know what to do." Patsy's mother said, "Call Mrs. Pigglewiggle. She'll know what to do. You remember the radish cure, don't you?" Alan's mother was delighted. She said, "Oh, of course, I do, and I'll call Mrs. Pigglewiggle right now," and she did. Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, "So Alan has become a slow eater, tiny bite taker, has he? I thought he looked a little pale this afternoon." Alan's mother said, "He is so pale, his father calls him his little doughboy, and I know that he hasn't eaten more than a tablespoon of food in the last 2 days. What will I do, Mrs. Pigglewiggle?" Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, "Don't worry about Alan. He'll be all right again in a day or two. Let me see. Is it? Yes, it is Alan coming down the street right now. So I'll send home the slow eater, tiny bite taker dishes with him. Use the largest set for Alan's dinner tonight, the medium size for his meals tomorrow, the small size the next day, and the very small dishes the last day. Serve him portions of food to fit the dishes. That will be 4 days in all, counting today, and though he may lose some weight, he will gain it right back. I may send for him on the last day, and no matter how he feels, let him come to my house." Alan's mother said, "Thank you very much, Mrs. Pigglewiggle. I will do just as you say, and I will be so happy when he is cured." "I will send Alan right home with the dishes," said Mrs. Pigglewiggle. "Now don't worry, simply follow my instructions," and Mrs. Pigglewiggle said goodbye. After a little while, Alan came home carrying a large wicker basket. "Here's a present from Mrs. Pigglewiggle, Mother, and she said for me to be very careful with it." He set the basket on the kitchen floor and commenced to undo the fastenings. His mother said, "No, dear, this is a present for me, and I think I'll just put it aside for now. You run out and play until dinner. Goodness, you are pale. Run as fast as you can down to Patsy's house and put some roses into your cheeks." Alan's mother put the basket on the top shelf in the kitchen and shut the cupboard door, which left nothing for Alan to do but go out and play. However, instead of running down to Patsy's, he walked very, very slowly because he was tired from not having had enough to eat. Just before dinner, Alan's mother took down the basket and opened it. There were four little sets of dishes. The largest set had a plate the size of a saucer, a cup like a small after-dinner coffee cup, a small fork, and a little spoon. The medium-sized set had a plate like a doll plate, a doll cup, a very small fork and spoon. The small-sized set had a plate the size of a silver dollar, a cup like a thimble, a fork like a match, and a spoon like a salt spoon. The tiny-sized set had a plate the size of a penny, a cup that would hold but a drop, a fork like a needle, and a spoon like a pin. Alan's dinner that night was served on the large set. He was given a baked potato as small as an egg, a piece of meat like a postage stamp, a slice of tomato, and the small cup of milk. Alan was so interested in taking tiny bites that he didn't even notice his new dishes. He ate one-third of the potato, one-sixth of the meat, one tomato seed, and drank about half a cup of milk. When he asked to be excused, his father looked at his saucer plate still heaped with food and started to say no, but Alan's mother quickly said, "Yes, dear, you may be excused, but you must play in your room until bedtime." The next morning, his mother put a teaspoon of scrambled egg and an inch square piece of toast on the medium-sized plate and a tablespoon of orange juice in the doll cup. Alan loved the tiny fork and spoon because he was able to take such small bites that in 1 hour he had eaten but half the egg and one-third of the toast. He did drink all of the orange juice. At luncheon and dinner, he ate even less and took even smaller bites. He had turned a very pale green and was so tired he had to sit down all of the time. The next day, his mother brought out the small dishes. On the dollar plate, she put 3 cornflakes, a piece of bacon the size of a snowflake, and a quarter of a teaspoon of egg. In the thimble cup, she put 10 drops of cocoa. Alan was so tired that he had to crawl into breakfast on his hands. He was happy about the tiny dishes, though, and gave his mother a very sickly addition of the shiny smile. He cut the cornflakes into 13 pieces and ate a part of one. He ate a speck of egg, a nibble of bacon, and 5 drops of cocoa, and then crawled in and lay on the couch. For lunch, he had 7 drops of soup, 2 cracker crumbs, and enough milk to barely moisten his lips. For dinner, he ate 1 lima bean and drank 4 drops of milk. He crawled up to bed right after dinner. He had to rest 8 times on the way upstairs. The next morning, he was so tired it took him almost half an hour to crawl down to breakfast. His mother had the penny plate, the drop cup, and the needle fork and pin spoon. On the penny plate, she had 1 grain of egg, 2 toast crumbs, and 2 raspberry jam seeds. She had a drop of milk in the cup. Alan was so weak he had to lift the needle fork with both hands, but even so, he cut the 1 grain of egg in 2 and ate only 1 of the toast crumbs. He drank half the drop of milk and then lay down on the breakfast nook bench. Just then the telephone rang, and it was Mrs. Pigglewiggle for Alan. His mother had to carry him to the telephone and hold the big, heavy telephone receiver. Mrs. Pigglewiggle had great difficulty in hearing his weak, squeaky voice, and finally had to give up and talk to his mother. Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, "It is Alan's turn to exercise the spotted pony, and I would like him to come over right away." Alan's mother told Alan he was very excited, but he was so weak that his mother had to carry him out and put him in his little red wagon. Fortunately, it was downhill all the way to Mrs. Pigglewiggle's house, and when he got there, Dick Thompson and Hubert Prentice were waiting for him out in front. They lifted him out of his little red wagon and laid him across Spotty's back. Spotty turned his head around and licked the top of Alan's head comfortingly. Mrs. Pigglewiggle came out onto her front porch to see him off, and it took much self-control for her to keep from laughing as Spotty started slowly off down the street with Alan lying on his back like a bag of cornmeal. All morning, Alan lay on Spotty's back, his face buried in his mane, while Spotty paced the streets. Several times, women rushed out of their houses and asked Alan if he was ill, if he needed any help. Alan was very embarrassed and squeaked out, "I'm all right," and tried to sit up, but he was too weak. When 12 o'clock came, Alan was so tired that he knew he could not stay on Spotty's back another minute, so he guided the pony up to his own front gate. Then he rolled off his back onto the grass. He lay there like a wet sock, bawling. His mother looked out the kitchen window, and seeing him lying there, she became frightened. She thought Spotty was a spirited horse and that he had bucked Alan off. She ran out and knelt beside him. "Darling," she said, "are you hurt? Did that vicious horse throw you? How many times did he buck?" Alan smiled weakly at the idea of gentle little Spotty bucking or throwing anyone, but he began to cry again as he remembered that this was his last chance for a long time to exercise Spotty, and he was so weak that he couldn't stay on his back. He finally said to his mother, "Spotty did not buck or throw me. It is just that I am so tired I cannot stay on his back. I rolled off, and now I can't get back on, and it's my turn to exercise him, and I won't have another turn for a long, long time." Alan's mother said, "Now, see here, Alan. This all comes from your turning into a slow-eater, tiny-bite-taker, and if you want to ride Spotty this afternoon, you will have to come into the house and eat something." She tied Spotty to the fence, picked Alan up, carried him into the house, and set him in the breakfast nook. He leaned weakly back against the wall and closed his eyes. His mother began rattling pans and turning on burners, and pretty soon she handed him the drop cup filled with cream of tomato soup and the penny plate with 2 cracker crumbs on it. She said, "Now drink this soup in one gulp and put both those crumbs in your mouth at once." Alan did as he was told, then leaned back and closed his eyes again. Then his mother handed him the thimble cup filled with milk and a tiny peanut butter sandwich on the dollar plate. She said, "Drink this milk in one swallow and put that whole sandwich in your mouth." Alan did and was surprised to find that he didn't feel quite so tired. He leaned back, but he kept his eyes open. Then his mother handed him the doll cup filled with soup and the doll plate with some cottage cheese on it. "Drink that soup right down," she said, "and here's a large fork, and I want that cottage cheese eaten in two bites." Alan did as he was told. My, but he was feeling strong. He could sit up without leaning back, and oddly enough, he was very hungry. His mother handed him the after-dinner coffee cup filled with milk and the saucer plate with a piece of gingerbread on it. Alan didn't have to be told how to eat and drink these. He took large, hungry bites and big, swishing gulps, and the dishes were empty. His mother said, "Do you feel better, dear? Have you had enough lunch?" Alan said, "I feel much better, Mother, but I'm still very hungry. May I please have a large bowl of soup and a large glass of milk?" "Of course, dear," said his mother, and she quickly filled a large bowl with soup and a large glass with milk. Alan ate every drop of soup and drank every drop of milk and then jumped up from the table saying, "Oh, Mother, I bet Spotty's hungry. Shall I take him some soup?" "No, dear," said his mother. "I think that Spotty would prefer an apple and some lumps of sugar." So they fed Spotty, and then Alan climbed on his back and rode proudly away, sitting up very straight and holding on to the reins with one hand. When he reached the corner of Patsy's house, his mother called him to come back. He turned Spotty around and steered him up to the gate, and his mother came out with a basket of slow-eater, tiny-bite-taker dishes. Would you mind returning these to Mrs. Pigglewiggle?" she asked. "Not at all," said Alan graciously. "Just hand me the basket. I'll put it here in front of me and hold it with this hand. You see, Mother, I only use one hand to steer now." He carefully arranged the basket, kissed his mother, clucked to Spotty, and away they went in a very slow walk toward Mrs. Pigglewiggle's house. Chapter 8. The Fighter Quirler's Cure. Joanne Russell opened her blue eyes and saw that it was morning. She saw also that her twin sister Anne was still asleep. Joanne reached over and gave Anne a little pinch. "Wake up, Anne," she said, making her voice scary and urgent. "Wake up quickly. There's a big black spider in the bed, and it's on your side." Anne awoke with a squeal, leaped out of bed, stubbed her toe on the box of paints she had left on the floor the night before, banged her funny bone on the door, and went screaming into her mother's and father's room. "Mother, Daddy, there's a big black spider in our bed on my side. Mother, Daddy." Mrs. Russell sighed, sat up, and reached for her robe. She said in a low, calm voice, "Anne, you didn't fall for that old trick again, did you?" Anne grabbed her mother's arm and jumped up and down, squealing, "But Mother, Joanne said so. It's a big black spider." Mr. Russell turned over and yawned. He said, "Stop jumping and squealing and listen. If there is a big black spider in the bed, and it is highly unlikely, then why is Joanne lying in there, staring at the ceiling, and waiting to be bitten and to be spanked?" he said in a loud voice. Anne stopped squealing and listened gravely to her father, but when he finished speaking, she said, "But Joanne said there was a spider, Daddy. She said there was." Her daddy said, "Last one dressed gets the littlest melon," and he jumped out of bed and chased Anne out of the room, roaring like a lion. Mr. Russell sang gaily in his shower, but Mrs. Russell frowned as she dressed. Far from the children's room, she could hear, "That's my sock. Give it to me." "'Tis not. It's mine. Give it back." Sound of slap. "Mother, Anne's slapping me." "That's my petticoat. You're putting on my petticoat. Give it to me." "'Tis not. It's mine." Sound of slap. "That's mine." "No, that's mine." "'Tis not. 'Tis too." Slap, bang, crash, running steps. "Mother," Mrs. Russell said to herself. "Quarreling, quarreling, from the minute they get up until they go to bed at night. I do not believe that I can stand another day of it." She ran downstairs and began jamming oranges into the squeezer. Mr. Russell came whistling into breakfast. He said mildly, "Oh, scrambled eggs again. I was hoping for sausages and buckwheat cakes." Mrs. Russell said, "We had sausages and buckwheat cakes yesterday morning." Mr. Russell said, "What about brook trout? Bill Smith has them nearly every morning." Mrs. Russell said crossly, "Perhaps that is why he looks like a trout and his wife looks like a great big halibut." Mr. Russell peered at her over the top of his morning paper. He said, "You know, sweetheart, I think that the children's fighting and quarreling is making you irritable. Mrs. Russell said, I think it is too. In fact, it is driving me crazy. Just listen to them. From the upper hall, they could hear, It's my turn to go down first, Joanne. Tis not, it's my turn. You were here first. You were first yesterday. You know you were. But last night you traded your first turn for my pink crayon. I did not. You did too. Cheater. Double cheater. In came the twins. Joanne looked at her melon and then at Anne's. She said, Anne's melon is the biggest. She always gets the biggest and the most of everything. Anne said, You had the biggest yesterday. You're just a pig. You always want the most. Their daddy said, As a matter of fact, ladies, I have the biggest melon because I was the first one dressed. Now hush, he glared at them. The twins sat meekly down to their breakfast. They had taken but two bites, however, when Anne poked Joanne and hissed, I've got the most cereal, ha ha ha. Joanne hissed back, Yes, but I have three pieces of bacon and you only have two. Anne looked, and sure enough, Joanne did have three pieces. She grabbed one, but Joanne snatched her wrist, and in the ensuing scuffle, they managed to tip over Anne's milk and spill it all over the front of their nice blue pleated skirts. Their daddy spanked them, their mother sponged them off, and they left for school, red-eyed and miserable, but still quarreling. As they rounded the corner, their mother could hear, That big tablet is mine. Tis not, tis too. After Mr. Russell had left for the office, Mrs. Russell picked up the telephone and called her friend Mrs. Quitrick. She said, Mrs. Quitrick, this is Mrs. Russell, the twins' mother, and I want to know if Jasper and Myrtle ever quarrel. Oh, my dear, said Mrs. Quitrick, all children quarrel. Why, yesterday Myrtle hit Jasper with her big doll, and the eyes came out, and then Jasper hit Myrtle with the little hammer out of his nice new toolbox, and the head came off the hammer, and I just told them that I wouldn't have them breaking up their toys that way. Mrs. Russell said, But the children, weren't they hurt? Mrs. Quitrick said, Why, I didn't notice. I was so angry at them for breaking their lovely toys, and the doll hospital won't be able to put Myrtle's doll eyes back for 2 weeks, and you know how hard it is to get hammers these days. Mrs. Russell said, Well, thank you anyway, Mrs. Quitrick, and hung up. She poured herself another cup of coffee, and while she drank it, she thought and thought about her little fighter quarrelers. Then she had an idea. She would call Mrs. Pigglewiggle and ask her what to do. Mrs. Pigglewiggle would know if anyone would. She called Mrs. Pigglewiggle and said, Mrs. Pigglewiggle, I am Mrs. Russell, the mother of Anne and Joanne. Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, Oh, yes, the twins, such darling little girls and so pretty. Mrs. Russell said, But they quarrel so, Mrs. Pigglewiggle. They begin fighting the moment they open their eyes in the morning, and they don't stop until they fall asleep from exhaustion. It is dreadful, Mrs. Pigglewiggle. You should hear them. Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, Oh, I know. That's my sock. No, it's mine. That's my box. No, it's mine. Tis not. Tis too. You have the most. You're a pig. Mrs. Russell said, Why, Mrs. Pigglewiggle, you must have heard them. I was hoping they didn't quarrel when they were at your house. Mrs. Pigglewiggle said, No, I haven't heard Anne and Joanne, but I have heard hundreds of other children. You see, fighter quarreleritis is a common children's disease, and it is very contagious, but very easy to cure. Easy to cure? Oh, Mrs. Pigglewiggle, how? Asked Mrs. Russell. Well, said Mrs. Pigglewiggle, in the first place, fighting and quarreling are merely habits. One morning a child wakens and feels cross, and so instead of smiling at his little brother and saying, Good morning, he glares at his little brother and shouts, You've got on my shirt. The little brother says, I have not, because he hasn't. The cross child says, You have too, you have too, and the quarreling has begun. The next morning, both children have the fighter quarreleritis, and they wake and begin shouting rudely at each other. It soon becomes a habit, and they forget how to be courteous. Now, Mrs. Russell, I believe that if fighter quarrelers could hear themselves as others hear them, and see themselves as others see them, they would soon realize how unpleasant they were and would be cured. In order to do this with Anne and Joanne, you and Mr. Russell will have to pretend to be Anne and Joanne. First, however, you must write down every single fighting thing that the children say. Begin with this morning and keep a careful record of the whole day. Say nothing to the twins, but tomorrow you and Mr. Russell repeat their quarrels. I do not believe that it will be necessary to slap and pinch, but be sure to be loud and noisy. Don't laugh and don't let the children know that it is just a game. Look quarrelsome as well as acting quarrelsome. One day is usually sufficient. Mrs. Russell said, every morning Joanne tells Anne that there's a big black spider in the bed on Anne's side, and Anne comes screaming into our room. Should Mr. Russell and I do that? My, my, said Mrs. Pigglewiggle, that is the way Billy and Tommy Peters used to start the day, only Billy told Tommy it was a cobra. Well, cobra or black spider, you and Mr. Russell do the same. Goodbye and good luck. After saying goodbye to Mrs. Pigglewiggle, Mrs. Russell sat down and wrote down every word of Anne and Joanne's morning quarreling that she could remember. After school, she purposely gave one of them a bigger apple than she gave the other, and then followed them around and wrote down the quarreling. She stayed in their room while they undressed for bed and took notes. Fortunately, the children were very productive and fought about the amount of toothpaste on their toothbrushes, whose turn it was for the shower, whose pillow was softest, the amount of room they had in the bed, and who had the most covers, whose turn it was to turn off the light, who had the biggest feet, whose mouth opened the widest, who had the most teeth, everything. My, they were naughty and disagreeable. When she had finished writing it all down, Mrs. Russell handed a copy to Mr. Russell and told him about Mrs. Pigglewiggle. He thought it was a wonderful idea and studied his part carefully. The next morning, Joanne opened her blue eyes and was just reaching out to pinch Anne when she heard a commotion in her mother's and Daddy's room, and suddenly the door flew open and in came Mrs. Russell clutching her bathrobe and squealing, Anne, Joanne, quick, there's a big black spider in our bed and it's on my side. Joanne said calmly, How do you know there's one? Did you see it? Anne awoke, and out of habit, she leapt out of bed and ran for the door squealing. Her mother squealed louder, and Anne, surprised, asked her what the trouble was. Her mother began pounding on the bed and yelling, there's a big black spider in our bed on my side. Daddy said so. He saw it. Anne said, but mother, if there is a spider, why is Daddy in there? Her mother paid no attention to her but continued to squeal. Daddy said there was. I'm scared. Eee! Joanne said, we'd better go in and look, Anne. So they solemnly marched into their mother's and Daddy's room. Mr. Russell was lying in bed, gazing at the ceiling. Anne threw back the covers and Joanne peered into the bed, but all they could see were Daddy's feet, the toes wriggling. Anne said sternly, why did you scare Mother that way, Daddy? Mr. Russell said, was she scared? And jumped out of bed and ran into the bathroom, shouting at the top of his voice, ha ha, my first turn for the shower. At that, Mrs. Russell came flying in from the twins' room and began pounding on the bathroom door, yelling, it's not your first turn, it's mine. You traded me your first turn yesterday for a new golf ball. Mr. Russell laughed rudely and called out, too bad for you, I've got the door locked. Mrs. Russell kicked at the door and shouted, cheater, cheater, cheater. Anne and Joanne looked at each other. Their eyes were round with amazement. Anne whispered, let's get dressed. And Joanne said, yes, let's hurry. And they tiptoed out of the room, closing the door carefully behind them. While they dressed, they could hear their mother and father quarreling. When Mr. Russell came out of the shower, Mrs. Russell said, you use my towel. That's my towel. Mr. Russell said, 'tis not, it's mine. Mrs. Russell said, 'tis not, it's mine. Mr. Russell said, that's my shirt. You've got on my new t-shirt. Mrs. Russell said, well, you wore my golf sweater. Mr. Russell said, take off my new shirt. Mrs. Russell began to bawl. She sobbed, you wore my golf sweater and you promised me that I could wear the shirt. You're a pig. Mr. Russell said, all right, baby, wear the old shirt. At breakfast, Mr. Russell took a little ruler out of his pocket and measured the grapefruit, and then he took the biggest. Mother snatched it away from him and spilled coffee on the new t-shirt. Mother served the scrambled eggs and gave herself a large heaping plate and Daddy a small serving. Daddy looked at both plates and said, pig. Speaking of pig, said Mrs. Russell, it's my turn for the car. 'Tis not, said Mr. Russell, it's my turn. You had the car last week. Mrs. Russell said, I only drove up to the drugstore and back last week, and you went clear out to the golf club. Mr. Russell said in a very disagreeable way, it makes no difference to me how far you drove. You have had your turn, madam. Mrs. Russell began to bawl. I think you're mean, she wailed. Isn't it my turn, girl? She turned to the twins. The girls looked at their mother, but they didn't answer. Instead, they asked to be excused, put on their coats, and hurried off to school. At dinner that night, Daddy took the chops up to the bathroom and weighed them on the scales, and then took the two biggest. Mother took the biggest potato, but she sorted the string beans out one by one so that everyone got an equal share, but they were ice cold. The twins cleared the table, and Anne carried in the pumpkin pie. Now, pumpkin pie was the twins' favorite dessert, and so Anne was very careful to walk slowly and put the pie down gently in front of Daddy. But it was wasted effort, for Mother reached over and grabbed the pie, saying, "I'll serve that." "Oh, no, you won't," said Daddy, jerking the pie back. "We'll, too," said Mother, reaching for the pie, but Daddy jerked it off the table and held it over his head. Mother grabbed his wrist, and the pie went splat all over the rug. The twins began to cry. They said, "Mommy, Daddy, please stop quarreling. We just can't stand it anymore. It's dreadful." Mother said, "Why, we thought you enjoyed fighting." Joanne said, "We hate quarreling. We are so unhappy." Anne said, "Fighting is terrible. It makes us miserable." Mrs. Russell took Joanne on her lap, and Mr. Russell took Anne on his lap, and they said, "To tell you the truth, girls, we don't like quarreling either. It is just a habit we caught from you. Why, we must have been quarreling all day." The twins said, "You have, you have." Daddy said, "I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll all join hands and solemnly pledge that there shall be no more quarreling in this house. Then we'll all walk up to the Findlay's drugstore and seal the pledge with ice cream. Does everyone agree?" "We all agree," they shouted. So they joined hands and said, "I do solemnly pledge that I will not quarrel or fight in this house ever again." Then they walked up to Mr. Findlay's drugstore and had ice cream sodas, and even though Anne saw Mr. Findlay put 3 scoops of ice cream in Joanne's soda, and only 2 in hers, and even though Joanne saw Mr. Findlay put 2 scoops of strawberry in Anne's soda, and only 1 in hers, they neither of them said a word. The fighter quarreleritis was cured. The end.